Saw your prayers this morning as we look into the Word a little bit. I'm thankful that our society, and I think it's a blessing to our country, that a day has been set aside to recognize the importance of mothers. I'm also very aware of the fact that a card or flowers on Mother's Day does not near touch or show the appreciation that we need to give to our wives and mothers just on a daily basis by appreciating the hard work and the sacrifice that our wives and mothers give to make a house a home. There are a lot that goes into it. I think about as a family and having young children. You know, we get up in the morning to go do something, and you know, I can get up and get around and say, okay, well, you know, are we ready? But my wife's got, you know, three or four others she's trying to get around, get ready. There's a lot of work that mothers do, and I want the mothers to know this morning that we do love you all and appreciate what you are and who you are and what you mean to us today. One author put it this way about mothers, speaking of Mother's Day. He said, perhaps it is even more important in an age when political feminism belittles motherhood and what is actually feminine on a daily basis. They disdain those who focus their attention and place their priority on their children and on their homes. But you know this morning that there is no greater vocation or calling than that of a mother. And I will say there is no other work of God that trumps motherhood. There are some that say, well, God gave me a burden to go do this or go do that. Nothing is more important than that call to be a mother and a wife. And I want to encourage you all to know that being a mother and giving your life for your family is not second class. It's not second class. It's actually first class. And to make a good mother, I was thinking about a good mother and I thought, you know, a good mother's not derived from what she looks like when she looks in the mirror. It doesn't come from having a high IQ. Doesn't come from higher education. It does not come from having business acumen. It doesn't come from those, the wisdom of the world. But being a good mother comes from having love, showing love, giving security to her children and her family. You know, when I come home, I don't have to worry that my wife's gone. Don't have to worry that she's taken off on me because of her love, voluntarily given. And we honor those of you that are walking worthy of that vocation, because motherhood is a vocation, and I know sometimes it probably feels underappreciated, and I know it's underpaid. And brethren, if you might allow me to interject this, I hadn't planned to say this, but if you go work and you bring home the paycheck, and whose name is the paycheck, and you say, well, that's mine. You know, really, it has both your names on it. If your home is like God wants it to, this is not an issue of this is my money and that's her money. But who's cooking your food and taking care of your clothes and being there for you when you come home and making a home for you? That means just because you may actually be getting a check in your name, if you were to pay your wife what she's worth, you wouldn't make enough. And so brothers heir. Husband's heir, especially. I was going to say a few things to mothers this morning, but brethren, we heir. You go out and you get your money, you go buy your big toys. And if any of you have done that recently, I don't know about it, so I'm not picking on anybody. But there are too many men, they go buy their big toys, their boats and their motorcycles, and nothing's wrong with those things. And their wife needs shoes, and their wife needs some things at home. And you say, well, we need to cut back, and first thing you cut is the grocery bill. Brethren, that ought not to be, and that's for free this morning. But if we're going to show our wives the respect and the love and the care that we should, it's going to come on those daily decisions of our interactions on finances, on what we do and where we go. It's going to be loving them like Christ loves the church. And wives, all of you this morning are worthy of that love. You're worthy of it. And I trust God will bless you. And as husbands as well, I think we need to be more aware, and I'm speaking to myself here, to be more aware of the work that our wives do, and let's not be guilty of adding to the burden. But let's rather do what we can to help ease the burden and the workload that our wives have. Because I'll tell you, how many of you brothers would like to switch places with your wife? Not many. There's a reason for that. We need to help our wives out and appreciate what they're doing. We live this morning in a world that is full of evil influences. The burden that I have to share this morning is on the influence of mother. It applies really to fathers as well. But there are a lot of pressures that are being exerted on our children and young people. Some of that's already been brought out this morning. And the answer, though, to the ills of our society, it's not going to be found in government legislation. It's not going to be found in school. It's not going to be found even here at church. You see, we want to give the best education we can to our children. We want to be in a good fellowship together. We want those things. But the greatest influence on children really comes down to a mother's influence. And I believe that with all of the evil influences that are being exerted on our children, the answer comes from our home. That's the basic unit. And keep in mind, God made the institution of the family before He did the church. It starts in the home, and that's where then our focus and our efforts ought to be, is for the Lord's blessings to be in our home. Where our society is lacking is women who have taken the role of motherhood seriously. You see, being a mother is more than just having a child. Just like being fatherhood is more than a man having a baby somewhere and walking off. That doesn't make that man a father, you see. What it has to do with is the relationship that we have with our children. It's a relationship, the amount of time, the love, the security that we put into giving to our children. And I believe, and I said it this morning earlier at breakfast, I want to say it again, I really believe that the best mothers and grandmothers are represented right here this morning. I believe that among God's people, that I'm going to repeat myself. I know sometimes because we're human, we can struggle and we can look at our lacks, and maybe as mothers, sometimes you realize there's some deficiencies. All of us have deficiencies. But when we measure what God has blessed you with, and the love that you give to your family, and I measure that to what I see out in the world doesn't even come close. And we honor that today. And we honor that. A righteous mother's life or influence, it goes beyond her children. You know, you mothers this morning, you may think, well, I wish I could do something for the Lord. I wish I could work for God. I won't ask for a show of hands, but how many mothers have felt that way? I wish there was something more I could do. I wish there was something bigger that I could do. Do you know, if you have a child that's in your care, that's where God's work starts. And that is where our desire and our prayer should be, that the Lord would give you fulfillment in filling that role. This is God's work. And there are going to be times that all of us get tired with everything that we do. I get tired of preaching sometimes. I believe God called me to do it, but there are times I wish I could just have a sabbatical from it. And I know sometimes mothers feel like they need a sabbatical as well. Is that being too honest this morning or open? All of us feel like we need a break sometimes. Mothers don't get a break, and some of the rest of us don't feel like we do either. But that's life, isn't it? And just because you're a mother and you feel that way sometimes, that doesn't make you a bad mother. But those are times, just like for the rest of us, we need to pray that God gives us more courage. That the Lord would encourage us and strengthen us when we get a little bit weary of some of the things that God has given us to do. But if you have a child in your care, you have one of the greatest responsibilities that there is found in this life. And I think about John Newton. Many of you know the story of John Newton. He was a very wicked man, blasphemer, very evil man. One story that was told about John Newton in that storm that he was in when he yielded his heart to God, he began seeking God at least during that storm. There was a sailor that overheard him praying, And this is John Newton's prayer. He was saying, O thou God of my dead mother, have mercy on my soul. The God of my dead mother. You know how old John Newton was when his mother passed away? It was before he was 7 years old. I don't know the exact age, but John Newton went to sea at 7 years old, and that was after his mother had passed away. The first few years of his life had left an indelible impression on John Newton that lasted a lifetime. And when he came to the place that he was willing to do business with God, he pointed back to his mother. See what a great responsibility mothers have? And as it is true with all honors and privileges, and this is called Mother's Day today, you know, with honor and privilege comes responsibility, doesn't it? And I want to encourage all of the mothers and grandmothers here this afternoon to let the influence, because you are influencing your children, let it be a godly influence. Let it be an influence that will plant seeds that even if they choose not to walk and follow after the Lord, that they will always remember, I know differently. Because I didn't just hear Mom say it, I saw her live it. The early life of Moses reveals one of the powerful influences of a mother. Moses was someone who was one of the greatest characters in the Old Testament. You know the story of Moses. He was born in Egypt to an enslaved people. And the Hebrews, they were growing strong. And I'm to save time this morning, I'm just going to encapsulate what's found over in the Exodus in the second chapter. But the Hebrews were growing strong, and Pharaoh put out a decree that all of the baby boys should be killed to prevent the population from growing of the Israelites. And we find that Moses' mother, when he was born, she hid him. For 3 months, she kept him hid in her home. But it came to a place that how long can you hide a baby? Eventually, the neighbors are going to see, the neighbors are going to know, and the Egyptians would report on him, and they'd get in trouble, and the life of Moses would have been taken. They were supposed to take, all of the midwives were supposed to take the baby boys and throw them into the Nile River as an offering and sacrifice to their gods, but also to control the population of the Israelites. But we find that after 3 months, Moses' mother, she built a little ark. She built a little boat, and she put the baby in it, and she left Moses' sister, possibly Miriam, and she left Miriam a great way off watching over that baby. So they took him down to the river and put him there in the reeds, and she sat there and watched. You can read this on your own time, the second chapter of Exodus. But remember, Pharaoh's daughter came down to the river to bathe, and she saw the little ark there, the little boat there, the basket. And she went and she opened it up, and it said that Moses was a goodly child. He was a beautiful little baby. And it said she wept because she was moved with compassion on this little Hebrew baby that should have been dead, should have been thrown into the river. And she took Moses to be her own child. And Miriam came up to Pharaoh's daughter, and she offered to get a wet nurse for him. I'll go get a Hebrew lady to take care of this baby for you. And she went, and the Pharaoh's daughter gave Moses to Miriam and said, go and raise it. Basically, go and take care of the baby. Well, the scripture teaches us that when the child grew, she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter and became her son. So after the child was out of the baby stage, he was taken back to Pharaoh's palace, to Pharaoh's daughter, and she called his name Moses. Now, over in the 7th chapter of Acts, in the 21st verse, it said, when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all of the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in word and in deed, and he was full 40 years old. And it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. Keep in mind, Moses was raised amongst one of the greatest nations of the earth.
The Egyptians of that time were some of the most educated, learned people of the time, and Moses had the best education that he could have. He was raised amongst an idolatrous people. They were idolaters. They worshiped idols. And that was how Moses was raised. He grew up amongst that. But it said that Joseph was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in word and deed. For 40 years, Moses dwelt among the Egyptians. For 40 years, Egypt was in Midian, and for 40 years, he was leading the children of Israel. There is record by Josephus, and some of the commentators kind of cast some doubt on the credibility of it. But Josephus says that Moses, traditionally, that Moses is thought to have led the Egyptian army. And he led the Egyptians, defeated the Ethiopians and others in battle. Moses was a man that was looked up to amongst the Egyptians. He was a man that was honored. This is not just somebody that was kept in a corner. Well, the scripture says over in Hebrews 11 now, Hebrews the 11th chapter and the 24th verse, it says, by faith, Moses, when he came to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasure in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of reward. By faith he forsook Egypt. Do you know that Moses had a choice to make? Am I going to stay in Pharaoh's palace and have all the wealth and the prestige and honor that came with that position, or am I going to choose to be aligned with God's people? And he chose rather to suffer affliction with God's people. Keep in mind that Moses, he was 40 years old when he made that decision. 40 years old. And he came to a place that he recognized that the pleasure of sin was just for a season. How did Moses know that? Moses had been inundated with the philosophy of idolaters for about 35 years. And he came to an age of 40 years old, and he looked upon his life, and he said, I'm not going to live this way, and I'm going to go suffer with God's people. Because sin is only for a season, and he esteemed the riches of Christ greater. He was looking forward to another day. And my question for us to consider this morning is, how did Moses make that decision? What do you think the answer is? He'd been raised and educated by the Egyptians. The answer was his mother and his father. But his mother had nursed him until he was weaned, and at that point he was taken to Pharaoh's daughter. Biblical scholars say that at that time the babies were nursed up to 4 or 5 years of age. That is more traditional in other countries as a prevention for disease, especially when there's lack of food. It's more than just being a year old. So it is probable that Moses was raised, in a sense, by his mother and was under her teaching and influence for the first 4 or 5 years of life before he was taken to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. This morning, those are the formative years of life. Too many people in our world today think, oh, wait till my children get to be 16 and 17 and 18 years old, and then I'm going to sit down with them and I'm going to talk to them about life. I'm going to begin to tell them the decisions they need to make. I want to share with you this morning, especially to the mothers, these young children that have been entrusted in your care are being influenced by the things that you're teaching them now. The people say, well, what does a 3-year-old get? Do you know some religions say, just give me a child until they're 3 years old or 5 years old, and that's what they're going to be the rest of their life. The formative years are those young, tender years. And I want to challenge, encourage the mothers and all of us this morning, don't think that we can wait and put off talking to our children and think, when my children get older, then I'm going to start setting a godly example. When my children start to get, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, when they're old enough to start saying, Dad, Mom, why are you doing that? Is that really what's right? That's too late, almost. It's almost too late. The decisions of how we run our home, the conduct, the things children see between a husband and a wife, they are being influenced 3 years old, 2 years old, 4 years old. And there's going to be things left in their hearts and in their minds by the things that they observe at that young, tender age. Moses, when he was old, made a decision to follow the Lord, and it has to go back to the first few years of life that he was influenced by a godly mother. Someone who taught him when he was too old to talk, maybe. He heard and saw the life that his mother lived. He saw the devotion to God. And he came to a place that he said it would be better to suffer right now in this life than to lose my soul. Mothers, that's the responsibility that you have this morning. It's a responsibility because you have a powerful influence on your children. And I believe that that story of Moses illustrates the truth so well that we find in Proverbs 22 when it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Our children may not choose to walk the way of God. They're free moral agents. If you were a perfect mother, your children still might choose not to follow the Lord. But if you have set before them an example of godliness, being a praying mother, a mother of love, a mother who has showed them and taught them the way to live, told them and taught them the right decisions to make, there's going to be something in their spirits they're never going to be able to escape. Even if they make decisions that bring the tears to your eyes, you've left them with something that they're never going to be able to get away from. They're never going to be able to depart from it. And that's why it's vital this morning. Like with Moses, early training pays off. And with the honor to the mothers and the grandmothers today, you have a great responsibility. There is no one that's going to influence your children more than you. Fathers, we have a large role to play. Don't leave it all to Mom. But there is something about a mother's influence that nothing can take the place of it. And I want to encourage and challenge the mothers to step up to the plate as you are. And realize that you are shaping a life. Don't wait till it's too late. But the things that your children see you do, the places you go, you are fixing their spirits, in a sense, and their character in what they see in those first few years of life. You have a powerful influence on your children this morning. And I want to say that it matters how we treat, it matters. The influence to the little ones. It matters today. I want to thank you again this morning for your attention, your time. I want to thank you for your godly influence. Enough words cannot be said today to let you know the depth of appreciation that we feel in our spirits for godly sisters. It means a lot. And I want you to know that we value you today. And I want you to know that the influence that you are passing on and how you're affecting your children, it matters, and it's going to pay off. If you don't see it right now, down the road, your children are never going to be able to escape it. May the Lord bless you all. Amen.